So President Cyril Ramaphosa has appointed former Trade and Industry Deputy Director General Garth Strachan as the new policy head to help unlock the country's cannabis industry. Remember, during his State of the Nation address this year, he said the country will start a formal industrial hemp and cannabis industry, which was welcomed news, right? Because many countries have already advanced and moved with industrialization of cannabis. The demand is great. It's a multi-billion rand industry. It's booming, but it's being held back by regulation. And this is a sector that has the potential to create, in fact, increase one, economic growth, but also create thousands of jobs. I think government in its master plan estimates that the industry is worth about 28 billion rand in South Africa and could create anything between 10,000 and 25,000 jobs across the sector. So the sooner we plug in, the better. Garth Strachan joins us now on the line, the new policy head for South Africa's cannabis industry. Garth, thank you so much for making time and congratulations on your appointment. Good morning.
Good morning, Clement. It's going to be a difficult and tricky assignment, but we'll give it our best shot.
Yeah, and I mean, one of the things I suppose you've got to do is look at regulation, right? Because before the value of the cannabis industry can be unlocked, there are a number of issues that need to be addressed, but regulation is probably the most important because the regulatory framework has been a headache for many players in the sector.
Absolutely correct. I think, I can't speak for government, and I'm a consultant, but I think it would be safe to say that government has moved rather slowly in relation to establishing a clear regulatory and legislative framework to secure investment and most importantly, actually, to protect, as the president has said, black small-scale farmers in rural areas who've been growing dacha for hundreds of years and their families surviving on their revenue from an illicit economy. So the question is, how do we ensure a regulatory and legislative framework which protects the interests of rural families, brings them into a regulated environment, at the same time as securing investment, in primary production in medicinal and pharmaceutical applications, in wellness products, and in the case of hemp for industrial use as an alternative to plastic and with multiple industrial uses. So this is a complex legislative and regulatory framework that's required. I think we need to be very careful that we don't take missteps which close the door on commercialization. And we need to be very careful that the private purposes bill, which is presently in Parliament, doesn't close the door on commercialization.
Yeah, and let's talk about that cannabis bill. There are amendments to this cannabis for private purposes bill. What's allowed and what's not? And how are the new regulations going to make it easy for this industry to flourish?
Well, I think, firstly, let me say that I haven't actually seen the final bill. As you know, it was the subject of public comment. I think it was last month, and many institutions and individuals made public comment and suggested changes. I think there were, we need to be very careful as a country that in attempting to meet the requirements of the Constitutional Court decision for public, private use, that we don't close the door on commercial opportunities. So I would say that we need to make sure that that private purposes bill deals very specifically with the issues for private use, but in so doing doesn't put such high regulatory barriers that it stops commercialization.
Yeah.
That's the first thing. The second thing is, I think we're going to need an overarching hemp and cannabis bill, in the same way that we have a liquor bill, for example, which provides for concurrent functions between the national and provincial governments and allows for regulation and ensures that, you know, the barriers to entry aren't too high, but at the same time, protects human rights and the rights of individuals in society to be protected from harmful substances, especially young people. In short, it's a complex regulatory and legislative environment. We must get it right. Mm. We must move with urgency because we've probably already lost first country mover advantage. Yeah. And we have to recognize that we're competing with big players in the international global market.
Yeah, and we've been left behind. It's taken so long for government to even acknowledge cannabis as a major contributor to our economy, and it's taking even longer to formulate the policy. And we're really missing out. The sooner we get on it, the better. You've mentioned that in ensuring these efforts to regulate the sector, you must make sure that you don't jeopardize the economic interests of rural communities that are already involved in cultivating this crop. What opportunities does unlocking this sector produce, even for like small-scale farmers?
Well, I think this is probably lies the most difficult problem in the sector lies exactly where you've pointed to. South Africa has a poor record, unfortunately, of support for rural agricultural extension and small-scale farmers, who, as we all know, are perhaps the most marginalized of communities in South Africa, and cannabis represents an important revenue stream for them. So the question is, how do we provide technical support, agricultural extension, aggregation of demand to get product to market, the important considerations such as the quality of product, the kind of seeds that are used and distributed, and ensuring that the barriers to entry for rural farmers aren't so high, so that there's no incentive for them to leave the illicit market. If you, as exists at the moment, the barriers to obtain a SAPRA license or a hemp license are so expensive and so onerous that there's no incentive for, you know, a rural black farmer who has very little access to resources and to, you know, capacity and capability to meet the requirements of an onerous regulatory regime. We've got to look at that very, very seriously, and we started doing some work on it. Unless we address, as we all know, the issues of rural poverty and address the issues that I've mentioned, especially the aggregation of demand, not just for cannabis, but for hemp and other potential products which can be grown in rural areas, then, you know, we will simply be recreating the existing structural defects in our economy, which is providing opportunities for those with deep pockets who can access investment, access technology, access markets. And that probably is the biggest challenge that we will face in doing this work.
Garth, we are talking here about a once illegal resource that is being brought into the formal economy. There is a shift, I think, that is required in perception. The public needs to see this social, healthcare, and economic benefits of cannabis. Has that perception been shifting, or more work still needs to be done?
Clement, in my opinion, a great deal of more work needs to be done. And, you know, we will do our very best to ensure that in a large public sector media and advocacy campaign is initiated to educate people both about the problematic areas of cannabis consumption, especially for young people, but also educate people and communities and faith-based organizations and civil society in general about the fact that the world is moving very rapidly towards the legalization of cannabis, responsible adult use, and in relation to all the other applications of hemp and cannabis. And this represents an important opportunity for South Africa. Education and public awareness is going to be central to what we do at the same time as making sure that we don't create a situation where, you know, the existing problematic elements of cannabis use are simply duplicated. Mm-hmm. It's unquestionable that, you know, there is a very illicit economy, and sometimes that illicit economy is closely associated with the underworld and, you know, criminal activity.
Yeah, it's going to be important to look at that. Isn't your role, Garth, as the policy head, a duplication of responsibilities, though? I know Operation Vulindlela, which you are part of, is not an implementation structure, but the lead department responsible for the Cannabis Master Plan remains the Department of Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development. So where do you, as the policy head, come in? How are you going to be working with the department to avoid duplication of responsibilities?
Clement, I often use the example of the automotive sector, which, you know, as everybody knows, has been successful. And I think one of the reasons which probably lie behind the success of that sector is the fact that there were very few government departments involved. It's no secret that securing intra-governmental, inter-institutional coherence, policy coherence, and program, you know, alignment is perhaps the biggest problem in government. So in my understanding, the Project Management Office in the Presidency, Operation Vulindlela, is designed not to take over the responsibilities of government departments, but to try and secure intra-governmental alignment to ensure that the decisions of government are taken speedily, that bottlenecks are unclogged, and that, you know, this implementation happens and is executed expeditiously.
Yeah, Garth Strachan, the new policy head for South Africa's cannabis industry, thank you for making time. I don't know, hey, I think this is another vote of no confidence in these departments. The president is bringing in people in the presidency to do what departments, if they were effective enough, were going to be able to do. Remember, we have Sipong Kosi from the private sector, responsible for helping cut the red tape and make it easy to do business with government. There's the former APSA CEO, Daniel Minele, who's the head of the Climate Finance Task Team, mobilizing funds for a just transition to renewable energy in the presidency. And you ask yourself, what's the work on for the environmental department? What else? The head of investments in infrastructure, Mr. Ramakgopa, is in the presidency. There are tourism envoys, investor envoys. Mavuso Msimang is leading a review of visa regulations. There are responsibilities that can be carried out by various departments. And for me, the signal seems to be that unless these responsibilities and reforms are located in the presidency, they won't be implemented efficiently, effectively, and within reasonable time. So what's the point of these ministers then? Because it doesn't look like the president has confidence in them leading this reform agenda that has been pushing for. I'd like to hear what you think.